Blog Talk Radio.
How are you doing today? I am doing just peachy on this lovely Thursday. It's been raining for the last two straight days here in New York. And every now and then I like the rain, but after a while, like when it happens for days straight, then I can't stand the rain. I can't stand the rain. Kiss my window. Who sings that song? Now I want to listen to that song. Matter of fact, somebody—I was gonna say somebody tweeted at me because I'm gonna play it for the break music, but I was gonna type in "I can't stand the rain," and I'm pretty sure that's the only song named "I can't stand the rain." Watch, there's like 32 of them now. I can't stand typing with one hand. The rain. Is that Missy Elliott? Interesting. Yeah, I guess so. Who knew? There's a Tina Turner song called I Can't Stand the Rain, too. That's weird. Okay, anyway, see, the show's getting weird. We've been on air for about 32 seconds. So a lot of stuff to get to today. Obviously, still going to update you on everything that's happening in Donald Trump's cabinet. Donald Trump's cabinet sounds dirty. When you say Donald Trump's cabinet, sounds gross. It's almost like you're talking about one of his orifices. Sorry for the visual. So we have Trump making love to Goldman Sachs, making sweet love down by the fire, actually. We're going to talk about that. We have Peter Dow, Hillary Clinton strategist, is just fucking making a fool of himself on Twitter. He keeps doing it. Me and him got into a fight not that long ago on Twitter, and, you know, rest in peace to his career because he was buried thoroughly and repeatedly. But now he wants more. He wants the scorn of Twitter to be heaped upon him. Then later on in the show, we have Sarah Palin talking about God, talking about Trump. So break out the stupid meter and hope it doesn't break. And some stuff on Obama and what he said about potentially legalizing marijuana. Pretty important stories, if I don't say so myself. So, let's go ahead and get started here, and we're going to do that with Goldman Sachs and Donald Trump and just how much he's come to love them. So, without further ado, here we go. So, we discussed yesterday how Donald Trump picked Goldman Sachs partner Steve Mnuchin for Treasury Secretary. He wanted to rub in his corruption as he campaigned on being super anti-establishment. So there are new reports now that he's going further. It's not just Steve Mnuchin from Goldman Sachs because, you know, that would be not corrupt enough. Now he wants, I'm not kidding about this, the president and COO of Goldman Sachs to lead the Office of Management and Budget. The president and COO of Goldman Sachs. So it wasn't enough to just say, okay, let's get a former partner, and that'll be good. That'll let everybody know, like, hey, I'm going back on all my promises. I'm going to drain the swamp in your mouth. No, he said, let's go for the president. So the guy's name is Gary Cohn. He is literally known for his arrogance. I'm not kidding. So I was, you know, researching him last night, and I was like, okay, oh, he's got a Wikipedia page. Let me just breeze through that real quick. There's a whole section on his arrogance. That's insanity. So there's that, and then he's been with Goldman since the 1990s, and he's directly involved with shady debt dealings with the government of Greece. So I love it when you pick somebody from Goldman, and it's not just bad enough that they're from Goldman, which, by the way, is bad enough if they were there during a certain time period, because if they were, that means they were involved in all types of criminal activity. But it's like he's picking people, specific people, with just insane amounts of dirt on them. He's like, okay, who's corrupt? Somebody, give me the corrupt ones. Those are the ones who I want. And by the way, just like with Mnuchin, this guy's been with Goldman forever, since the 1990s. So he's been with them through all the criminal activities. Mnuchin, his daddy was at Goldman Sachs. So Trump's getting like the second generation silver spoon in your mouth spoiled pricks. Kind of like him. How Trump's dad was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and he's like, oh, I just bungle my way through life, six different bankruptcies, all these problems, pretend like I'm a great businessman when I'm not, and then you coast to the presidency on that record, and then, okay, where are the other fuck-ups? Where are the other people who had rich daddies and then got into Goldman Sachs, and because I'm sure they'd be great for the economy. Oh, this is terrible, guys. Look, man, I give credit where credit is due. So we gave credit yesterday when it turns out Donald Trump made a deal with Carrier in order to keep 1,000 jobs here in the U.S. when Carrier wanted to ship them to Mexico. So, again, fair is fair. Give him credit there. I mean, the devil's in the details, so we'll get into that when the details come out. It looks like there may have been some unfair promises. Hey, we'll gut regulations and cut your taxes and give you favoritism if you keep the jobs here. So that's a problem. But overall, it's a net good thing that Carrier's keeping the jobs here. This is the opposite of what he's been saying. Drain the swamp, drain the swamp, drain the swamp. Just kidding, I'm going to nominate the swamp. Because remember, we spoke about this yesterday, and I've mentioned this on the show roughly a zillion times because I need people to understand this fact about Goldman Sachs. They were among the worst offenders in the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. They committed fraud, just like Bernie Sanders was saying. Fraud was a business model on Wall Street. Because what these guys would do is take these toxic subprime packages, sell them to unsuspecting clients, and tell them, you're going to make a lot of money, just believe me. I'm the financial expert here, so I know what I'm talking about. Give me the money, give me the money, give me the money. We're going to, you know, you're going to invest in these subprime packages, which, by the way, are rated AAA because we bought off the ratings agencies too. And then we'll turn around and bet on the same product that we just sold like it's awesome to fail. So we know it's going to fail. We think it's going to fail. We're going to bet for it to fail. We're going to make money that way, and we're going to make money ripping you off by selling it to you as if it's good. I mean, that's like selling somebody a car that's fucked up and the engine doesn't work, and you tell them it's going to be great, and then you turn around to your buddy and bet them, you know, a bunch of money that the car's not going to get out of the lot, and then it doesn't get out of the lot, and you make money that way too. So again, this is fraud. I mean, they probably broke dozens of laws in how their business model was set up. These people, guys, I mean, I can't overstate this. They should be in fucking jail. They're criminals. They are criminals. Just because they wear a suit and tie doesn't make them good people. So they should be in jail, but no. They get love under Democratic administrations, and they get love under Republican administrations, and they get love from a politician who said, specifically, I'm going to drain the swamp, I'm against the lobbyists, I'm against the corruption in Washington. It's sick. It's sick. And all the Trump bots who are out there rationalizing this, go fuck yourself. Because, you know, you latched on to the anti-establishment rhetoric and, oh, yes, you know, this is somebody who's going to fight for the little guy. Then when he shows signs of, I'm not going to fight for the fucking little guy, you go, I don't care, I like Daddy Trump. So you don't give a shit about the actual issues. You don't give a shit about the people. You don't give a shit about creating a better system. Now you're just playing defense. You're playing defense for your team, Team Red, Team Republican. And so whatever he does, you're going to defend it. It's exactly what you did under George W. Bush, too. Remember, under all the Republicans and all the conservatives in the country, oh, God, we hate deficits and debt. I mean, that's the last thing we ever want to see. George W. Bush gets in there, balloons it. I mean, it shoots up a $1.4 trillion deficit. He leaves annual deficit. He leaves Obama. What did the Republicans say? Deficits, Dad. And did we ever say anything against that? No. So defend it when, at that time, Daddy George W. Bush did it. Now you defend it when Daddy Trump does it. Be objective, please. I go after Obama all the time when he's wrong. You want to know why? Because I actually give a shit about the issues. I don't have a fucking cult of personality and worship somebody. So don't be like that. But they are. They've already been like that. You should have seen my Twitter feed when I simply typed out the facts on Mnuchin the other day. I told you about this. I said he's a Goldman Sachs partner. He worked for Soros. He's a hedge funder. The slew of fucking hatred I got, it was unbelievable. And they were all just, oh, he's competent in the field. Right. The same argument they made when George W. Bush appointed a former oil company executive to head the EPA. He's competent. He's competent in his field. Yeah, he knows the regulations because he's used to evading them. So it's not like he's going to enforce them. It's just sad. It's so sad. So you're a liar, Don. That's what you are. Drain the swamp. This isn't draining the swamp. This is the exact opposite of draining the swamp, and you fucking know it. By the way, why don't you just hire everybody at Goldman Sachs? Why don't you empty Goldman Sachs and put them all in your administration? I mean, where's Lloyd Blankfein? Where's Lloyd Blankfein at? You got to give him a job, right? He just keeps picking Goldman Sachs people and acts like, what, we're not supposed to notice? We're not supposed to recognize and go, oh, shit, you're going back on your word. What a fucking asshole. Okay. Now let me give you more on Mnuchin because this is really, really important. Steve Mnuchin is Trump's Treasury Secretary pick. He's, of course, a hedge funder. He used to work for George Soros. He's a Goldman Sachs partner. He is the swamp. He fucking is the swamp. So he ain't draining the swamp. But understand that he's even bad among the ranks of those cretins at Goldman Sachs. So, I mean, fraud was the business model, so they're bad. But even among those people, he's really bad. Okay, so what do I mean by that? Well, political reports here. One West, a bank Mnuchin and his partners established during the collapse, has taken steady fire from regulators and consumer advocates for myriad failures ever since. In Florida, the company foreclosed on a 90-year-old woman after a 27-cent payment error. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo singled out the lender for squeezing Superstorm Sandy victims as well. Okay, so let me give you some background on this. He took over IndyMac during the financial crisis, and he ended up specializing in foreclosing on old people who had reverse mortgages. So bad enough getting rich off of the pain and suffering of others in the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, but then you learn the details of it, and they did shit like this. Foreclosed on a 90-year-old woman over a 27-cent payment error. This guy was the head man in charge. The conversation over. You cannot have this guy as Treasury Secretary. You can't do it. Guys, look, I go further than that. On the Goldman Sachs thing alone, I can't do it. Because the whole fucking model of the business was criminal. This is what Bernie Sanders said during the primary. It was fucking criminal. And we all went after, rightly, we all went after Hillary Clinton. Because she got paid over $600,000 to give a couple speeches there. Now, she's not giving those speeches because they really give a shit about her position on birth control. They're giving her the money because they wanted to buy access. There was a good chance she was going to be the next president of the United States, so they wanted to be able to pick up the phone and give her a call and say, hey, remember that thing we spoke about? Come through with that. Whether it be a subsidy or a special tax break or a deal for tax repatriation or whatever it is that allows them to get the policy that they want while regular people get screwed. Now we know the exact same goddamn thing is going on with Donald Trump. We just did the story before. It's not only Mnuchin. Mnuchin, he wants his Treasury Secretary. He also wants from the president and COO of Goldman Sachs. His name is Gary Cohn. He wants him to be to lead the Office of Management and Budget. So, Don, why don't you just hire all of Goldman Sachs? Why not officially declare Goldman Sachs is now my cabinet? My entire cabinet is Goldman Sachs. Because you're almost already there. Lloyd Blankfein, give Lloyd Blankfein a position while you're at it. Why the fuck not? And then hilariously come out there and argue to the American people, oh, I'm draining the swamp. That's what I'm doing. Believe me, I'm draining the swamp. It's tremendous. Let me just tell you. No, but see, this is the thing about Trump, is that he's also capable of just being the world's most shameless liar. I mean, we've seen it firsthand during the primary, and we've cut the video back to back. So, you know, he's, I was against the Iraq War. Okay, cut to the clip of him on Howard Stern being tepidly in favor of the Iraq War. I said we should get all the troops out. Cut to the clip of Donald Trump saying, you know, we should have left behind like 20 or 30,000 troops. There's just, you know, contradiction after contradiction. Libya is another great example. I never spoke, he said to Ted Cruz during the primary. Libya? I never spoke about Libya. I was in favor of Libya. Cut to the tape of him saying, you know, we really need to go into Libya and topple Gaddafi. So the guy, he's just capable of shameless lies. You know how we also know this, right? I mean, there's countless examples. But remember the John Miller thing? No, I feel like people didn't make a big enough story about that. Now, usually I'm one of the people who is just, okay, I only care about the policy substance. Don't give me that other horse shit. But this was a very telling story. So Trump used to pretend to be his own agent. And he would answer phone calls and, or not answer phone calls. He would make phone calls to, like, you know, tabloid magazines and tell them, Trump's sex life is tremendous. Let me just tell you, all the ladies want him. It's unbelievable. And it was like a running joke in the tabloid magazine. People would know it was him. He'd say, yeah, this is John Miller. I'm John Miller. Tremendous. And you could hear his voice clearly. So they got older recordings of this, where he's pretending to be his own agent. And they played it for him on, like, the Today Show or something, and they said, are you claiming that's not you? He's like, yeah, that's not me. And what are we doing here? We're talking about something from however many, 15 years ago, 20 years ago? Please. Okay, move along. So he's able to just, like, no, brush it off, move along. But wait, that is the most obvious lie I've ever heard. That is so clearly you. I mean, that's a level of lying that's just fucking pathological because it's so goddamn obvious that it's you. But you just brush it off and then move along. Well, that's what he's like here. Drain the swamp. I'm anti-establishment. Anyway, I'd like to hire all of Goldman Sachs to run the entire government. Thank you very much. Tremendous. Believe me. Kicked a 90-year-old woman out of her home over a 27-cent payment error. And this isn't the only example of them being fucked up. One West, the entire thing about it became foreclose on old people with reverse mortgages during the subprime mortgage crisis. You're going to have this guy who was in charge of that lead the country in a way that's going to look out for regular people when they didn't even care. He didn't even care about the most obviously vulnerable people in the country. Super old people with financial struggles. He's going to make money off that, and then he's going to turn around and do what's good for the American people, which, by the way, is the job of these people in government, to find a way to have the government represent us and do the right thing, whether it's in the budget or foreign policy or whatever it is. He ain't draining the swamp. He is the swamp. All the people who are Trump lovers, who sniff his farts on a daily basis, I need to come out and say, you know what? We were wrong. Hashtag drain the swamp in my mouth is what's happening. Okay. All right, let's squeeze in one or two more before the first break. All right, let's go to, let's make fun of Peter Dow. That should be good. Peter Dow was a strategist for Hillary Clinton. He was also, back in the day, a strategist for John Kerry. So he's basically been a Democratic establishment insider for a while now. He's part of the club. And as part of that role, he's been throwing haymakers at Bernie Sanders' face for months now. And naturally, the arguments he's been making are the dumbest fucking arguments I've ever heard in my life. So let's take a look at his recent installment here. He said the other day, I'll be crystal clear, Bernie Sanders has absolutely no business determining the course of the Democratic Party after the harm he did to us. That's so stupid, I'm going to read it again to wrap my mind around it. I will be crystal clear, Bernie Sanders has absolutely no business determining the course of the Democratic Party after the harm he did to us. How can anybody believe that? So let's stop and review the facts here. Bernie Sanders, a person not known by anybody except the biggest political junkies, an obscure senator from Vermont, he decided he was going to run for president. He's about 372 years old. He calls himself a socialist. He's a Jewish, potentially atheist too, and didn't fucking comb his hair, literally. And he decided to take on the behemoth of the Democratic Party with the most name recognition, maybe of any candidate ever at that point. So she was Secretary of State, she was First Lady, she was Senator from New York. There was already speculation of her going to run. She was literally a celebrity. And she also had the entire celebrity establishment behind her and the financial establishment behind her. Wall Street and big money donors for days. Somehow, that guy got 47% of the vote and won 22 states. Not only that, when you looked at the polls for the general election, Bernie Sanders was up in some polls, this is amazing, 15 points nationally on Donald Trump. 15 points. On average, 10 points. Hillary Clinton would go back and forth between up 3 points, up 4 points, up 2 points, just in that range. Now, obviously, she ended up winning the popular vote by over 2 million votes. So, she ended up winning by maybe a 1 point or 2 points, but that wasn't enough to defeat Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton lost, and she lost for very understandable reasons when you look at the demographics. What happened is she lost the white working class. The Democratic firewall fell. Ohio wasn't part of the firewall, but it's part of the same grouping of states here. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. These are states that fell. The Democrats were supposed to hang on to that. And she didn't even step foot in Wisconsin because she thought that one's on lock. It wasn't on lock. Now think back to what the Hillary Clinton campaign said about Bernie Sanders during the primary. They argued his supporters are too white and too working class, so he's not going to win the election. That's the exact demographic that lost you the election, because they didn't turn out for you, because they don't believe you, because you have horrific, horrific messaging, and your campaign was shit. Get stronger together, break down the barriers, cliches, and platitudes. America's already great. Damn it. Now, Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, see, the thing is, he nipped in the bud everything that got Trump the broader appeal that he needed to win the election. See, Trump, yes, he was going to get a lot of the, let's face it, deplorables in the country, who really are just racist and bigoted and xenophobic. He was going to get them because of a lot of the shit he said in the campaign. Ban 1.6 billion Muslims from coming into America, deport all undocumented immigrants, do nationwide stop and frisk, which of course disproportionately targets black people and takes away their Fourth Amendment rights, and over 90% of the time doesn't, yield anything. He was going to get those people no matter what. He was going to get the Republican base no matter what. But he was able to get more people. Why? Because of the anti-establishment angle of his message. Now, Bernie Sanders nips that in the bud. So Bernie Sanders has all of the benefits of the Trump anti-establishment message with none of the downsides of the baggage of bigotry. So, again, this is why the numbers showed Bernie Sanders would have won the general election in a fucking landslide, and Hillary Clinton lost. Now, knowing all that, how the fuck does this tweet make any goddamn sense? This tweet would make sense if he took out Bernie Sanders and put in Hillary Clinton. Let's read it again that way. I'll be crystal clear. Hillary Clinton has absolutely no business determining the course of the Democratic Party after the harm she did to us. That is exactly right. Because this establishment, corporatist, hawkish, centrist/center-right Democratic Party got its goddamn clock cleaned. So understand, it ain't just the presidency. Now you have Republicans hold the majority of state legislatures. They hold the majority of governorships. They hold the majority in the House of Representatives. They hold the majority in the Senate. And they have the presidency. They have everything. 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 Now, I submit to you, who's been in charge of the Democratic Party for the last 8 years or so? It's been the establishment wing. It hasn't been Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Keith Ellison. It hasn't been those people. It hasn't been the progressive wing. You guys have been in charge. You built that. You own the fucking loss. So Bernie Sanders gave the Democratic Party the way forward. He showed them, look, if you want to be viable, man, I mean, look at the numbers of these millennials, what they like. Did you know among millennials, socialism polls more favorable than fucking capitalism? And you're out there bragging about the fucking, you know, speeches you gave to Goldman Sachs and, you know, you're part of the establishment and moderate, call me a centrist, guilty! So you guys are wrong based on the numbers. When you go issue by issue, Bernie Sanders' policy platform is beloved by everybody, even Republicans. So this guy offers you the way. He offers you the popular messaging. He gets the groups that you needed to win but you didn't get. And then you slap him in the face. And then you turn around and say, step aside, man. You're the problem. You can't determine the course of the Democratic Party because you did harm to us. Except Peter, President Obama has been in charge. And we just got our clocks cleaned. Hillary Clinton ran. She was the candidate in the general election. She was the nominee. She lost. What more evidence do you fucking need? It's been proven to you, and you still are refusing to let go of power. And by the way, you've heard all the deflections. We covered it with the Karen Finney story not that long ago. They're blaming anything and everything but themselves. Anything and everything. So it's, you know, it's James Comey from the FBI. It's sexism in the country. You name it. Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, even though if every single Jill Stein voter voted for Hillary Clinton, she still would have lost. And even though Gary Johnson took more from Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton, they just throw it out there. I don't know if every third-party candidate voted for her. Except why would you even fucking assume that? And 9% of Democrats voted for Donald Trump. So just deflect, 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 deflect. Don't look in the mirror. Don't be self-critical, because if you do that, you might find massive, massive flaws that need to be addressed. Better to not address any of those flaws, blame everybody else, and move along and continue to lose. That's what's going to happen if you listen to Peter Dow. Because guess what? Just like I told you at the beginning of the story, who was he a strategist for? You can't make this stuff up. Hillary Clinton and John Kerry. What happened with Hillary Clinton and John Kerry again? Oh, that's right. They lost. You have no right to talk to us about a winning strategy, Peter Dow. You're the epitome of a loser. Okay. Quick break. When we come back, Medical Cures Act passed by the House. I got to give you the details on that and much more. Stay right there, guys.
Early birds don't play, making drop in spots. We struggle, but we hustle, and we go around the clock.
Washington yesterday. So the Medical Cures Act was passed by the House yesterday, and this bill really is just quintessential Washington politics. So Huffington Post breaks it down for us about the good things that are in the bill, but then naturally the horrific things that went hand in hand with it. So they say, on Wednesday, the House overwhelmingly approved the 21st Century Cures Act, a bill that would commit billions of dollars to medical research while sending $1 billion to states to help combat heroin and painkiller addiction and recovery. But there's a complication. Instead of cracking down on the pharmaceutical companies that fueled the boom in opioid abuse, lawmakers are rewarding the industry. No healthcare-related bill of this size could move through Congress without the support of Big Pharma. The authors of the 21st Century Cures Act earned the industry support by including regulatory rollbacks that drug makers have long sought in creating cheaper and quicker paths for drug approval by reducing safeguards. It's as if the fire department had to pay off the arsonist to get permission to put out a fire. Lawmakers have been left with a Hobson's choice. The bill would make billions of dollars available for medical research. It would fund lofty goals such as precision medicine, a White House initiative to map the human brain, and Vice President Joe Biden's cancer moonshot. It would save lives, but it would also undermine regulations that patient advocacy groups say are essential for making sure medical and drug research is conducted ethically and safely, meaning it could cost lives too. It's so gross. It's so gross, man. Think about it. So they decide, well, let's do some good things. All right, we're going to fund, an attempt to cure different diseases, including cancer, and we're going to finally combat the opioid crisis. And instead of just doing the right thing, naturally, they have to put just countless examples of the wrong thing in the bill. So in order to get the blessing of the pharmaceutical industry, who are one of a bunch of industries that really run the government, they're like, okay, what do you guys want? Tell us what you want, we'll put it in the bill. Like, okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to do massive regulatory rollbacks because we view them as too costly and we view them as getting in the way of our profits. So a lot of the safeguards that are set up for regulations to make sure that the drugs are safe and effective, they're now gone. Now, so far, this is just passed by the House. But you can see this is a perfect encapsulation of the way Washington works, that even when they do something where you go, okay, I guess that's good, there's massive downsides to it. I mean, you can even see this in Obamacare, because Obamacare was a giant giveaway to the health insurance industry because it mandated that people buy private insurance. So you're giving them a captive market. So you're just handing over money to the insurance companies. Now, the upside is many more people are insured. And then there were other provisions in there that were unquestionably good, like, okay, kids get to stay on their parents' rolls until they're 26 and pre-existing conditions can't be rejected. So even when they do things that are good, they're like, okay, we have to tack on something that's just a giant blow job to corporate America, and that's exactly what this is. Now, to give you an indication of just how bad the rollbacks are and the deregulation is of the pharmaceutical industry, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are out there going, no, this isn't even a hard choice. Vote against it. No way. No way, no way, no way, no way, no way, no way, no way. You want to do the good things? Let's do the good things. Okay, let's fund cancer research. Let's give money to the states to combat the opioid crisis. Let's do it. Let's do it. We're all for it. But the things you attach to it are going to cost lives. It's going to fucking kill people. So, look, if they're against it, they probably know the details of the specific regulations that are rolled back better than I do and better than any of the articles I read explain them. So I think that's a good sign as to just how much of a giveaway this is to the pharmaceutical industry. And, guys, this comes back to the main point, the most important point when discussing politics in the United States of America, which is there's one giant virus that is the core problem of everything, money in the system. The only reason the pharmaceutical industry has such control over the government and you need their blessing to pass anything is because we allow that to be the case. From the late 1970s and onward, in subsequent Supreme Court decisions, they decided, money equals free speech, and we can basically have unlimited money in politics. And that made it so that, billionaires and corporations said, oh, great, so I'll just buy the government and get the politicians to be our bitches who do whatever we want for us. And that's what happened. I always bring up this fact because it's so telling. You can vote for a brand new Congress, and then like 2 months later you do a poll. Hey, do you like Congress? It gets like a 9% approval rating. You just picked them like 1 month, 2 months ago. What do you mean 9%? Because everybody knows we're always voting for the lesser of two evils because they're both parties are just totally bought and owned by corporate America. Big money runs the entire scene. In fact, they've done studies on this. They found that the United States is basically officially an oligarchy because what the people want doesn't become law. The only area where there's a correlation between opinion and what we end up getting in law is for elites, is for corporations, is for rich people. So the donor class runs everything. So we know the fix for this. We know the fix. The fix is you get the money out of the system, you mandate clean elections by law, and you punish strictly, rigidly, fervently, severely people who violate that. So if you have clean elections, which is public financing of elections, and you ban private money, well, then who are the politicians going to represent? They're going to represent you and me because it would be us paying them at that point. Right now, when we elect them, but they're getting money from ExxonMobil and they're getting money from Goldman Sachs and they're getting money from all these different corporations and all these different billionaires with their own special interests, who are they going to represent? They're going to represent those people because it's human nature. Do you care about a grandmother in Cleveland when you just got a check for $200,000 from some asshole billionaire? No, you're going to be like, whatever you want, sir. So that's where we're at. We know the solution to fix this. It's to get money out of the system. We should get a constitutional amendment to get money out of the system so that it can't be a law that could just be ignored or overrided or whatever the case is. Do a constitutional amendment to fix it, and this way it's fixed permanently. So that would require a constitutional convention. We should go through the states because Congress is too corrupt and they would never do it themselves. And maybe at the end they'd feel pressure when we're close to getting it, and they go, okay, all right, we'll do something here. So that's the answer. Wolfpack is working on this. Move to Amend is working on this. These are different movements to try to get money out of the system. Represent.us tries to do it in a different way. You know, I think they focus more on the states and they focus more on actual laws versus the Constitution, which is, of course, the supreme law of the land. So I'm in favor of any and all ways to get money out of the system because this is what happens when you have money in the system. It's inevitable. It's inevitable that the pharmaceutical industry, they're going to get their claws on any bill that has to do with the pharmaceutical industry. And they're going to steer the direction they want the politicians to go in. And even when the politicians do something that's somewhat good, in some ways, there's giant giveaways to the industry because they bought the government. Okay. Now we go to some Donald Trump hypocrisy. Donald Trump was caught in some hilarious hypocrisy on the issue of Pakistan. Now, before he was president and even during the primaries, it's not even close. He is massively, colossally anti-Pakistan. In fact, he said on Twitter in 2012, "When will Pakistan apologize to us for providing safe sanctuary to Osama bin Laden for 6 years? Some ally," put it in quotes. He also said at one point, "Get it straight, Pakistan is not our friend. We've given them billions and billions of dollars, and what do we get? Betrayal and disrespect, and much worse. #time to get tough." So, hey man, he's as clear as it gets. I'm gonna show him. I'm a tough conservative Republican. I'm gonna get in there, and I'm gonna crack some skulls, and I'm gonna make them bend to my will and do the right thing. Because I'm Donald Trump. The last thing I do is genuflect at the altar of power in other governments and tell them, hey, you know, you're our buddy now. I mean, that'd be a sellout bitch turning his back on the American people. So now we know. He just recently called the Prime Minister of Pakistan since becoming the president-elect. And let me give you some of what he said here. He said, you have a very good reputation. You are a terrific guy. You are doing amazing work, which is visible in every way. I'm looking forward to seeing you soon. I'm talking to you, Prime Minister. I feel like I'm talking to a person I have known for long. Your country is amazing with tremendous opportunities. Pakistanis are one of the most intelligent people. I am ready and willing to play any role that you want me to address and find solutions to the outstanding problems. It will be an honor, and I will personally do it. Feel free to call any time, even before January 20th. That is before I assume my office. And then on being invited to visit Pakistan by the Prime Minister, quote, Mr. Trump said that he would love to come to a fantastic country, fantastic place, and a fantastic people. Please convey to the Pakistani people that they are amazing, and all Pakistanis I have known are exceptional people. Okay, now look, man, I want to be clear about this. Do I want Trump to say shit like that? Yeah, kind of. I mean, look, even it, like governments that I would get tough on, Saudi Arabia, Israel, you know, you name it. It's not like I'd get in there and be like, oh, yeah, I'm so tough. I'm going to put my balls on the table and you guys can look at it. Oh, yeah, you like that? I bet you do. No, you got to be smart about it. You got to be reasonable about it. You got to be rational about it. And you can do tough actions while still talking to people like they're human beings. So, yeah, if I was president, I'm talking to fucking Saudi Arabia. Okay, say, hey, you know, it's nice to finally meet you. I'm happy I'm finally talking to you. I hope we can work together in productive ways. And I hope we can address the problems that we have together. Totally normal to be like fine, to be, you know, straightforward and to leave an opportunity there, an option there of like, you want to work with me? Like, we could do this the right way or we could do this the wrong way. So, you know, again, with Saudi Arabia, let's have a conversation. What's up with the situation with women in your country? They can't drive, you know. Hey, what's going on? Why do you punish drug smugglers with death? Why do you behead people in the public square for sorcery and witchcraft? Why do you say all atheists are terrorists? So, you know, you give them an option. Hey, we could talk this out and we could do it diplomatically or not. So I'm fine with, like, with some relatively, you know, jovial, open-minded introductions. Trump didn't just do that. You know he didn't just do that. First of all, beforehand, it was like, ally. They're not our friends. They're bad people. Terrible. Sad. Pathetic. And now he's like, oh, the Pakistani people. They're tremendous people. Smartest people in the world. Smartest people on the planet. I just want to let you know, I've heard tremendous things about what you're doing. So it's just, it's polar opposite. It's polar opposite. So it just shows you the kind of person he is. So it just, again, he can just lie and fucking say anything and then just flip-flop and it's nothing to him. I've said it before, but contradictions aren't a thing to him. It's like he doesn't believe in them. It's like it's irrelevant. I said something one day, I said the opposite the other day, or whatever. That's how I feel now, so fuck off. In fact, that's literal. One time when they were talking about his net worth and there was like a court case, a deposition or some shit, he's like, I'm worth a few billion dollars. They're like, what is that based on? He's like, well, you know, it depends on a lot. It depends on what my assets are and how I feel on that day. What? How I feel on that day? What? No, it doesn't depend on that. That's ridiculous. But that's Trump here. He's in a good mood. He, you know, he got elected. Okay, I'm talking to Pakistan, who I think is a fucking horrific country. You did horrific things, and I'm going to get tough on them. Anyway, you're the best people on the planet, some of the most intelligent people I've ever heard. You're a terrific guy doing terrific things. Feel free to call me whenever you want. You want to chat about Gilmore Girls? Sometimes I watch Gilmore Girls. It's a tremendous show, believe me. And if you want to come over, we can watch Gilmore Girls. I'll get my PJs on. We'll have a little PJ party and whatnot. I'll tell you, you know what I like? I like hanging out with my buddies and drinking Code Red Mountain Dew and having delicious Malomar cookies. Have you ever had Mountain Dew and Malomars? It sounds bad, but it's actually really good. Tremendous, let me just tell you. So anyway, come on over and let's have some fun. I would have been fine with the, you know, be positive and open-minded and give them a chance with Pakistan, but he didn't just do that. He gave him a wet, sloppy blowjob, and it's the polar opposite of what he used to say and what he supposedly believes. And he can do this on any and every issue, which is what makes him scary. Because at the end of the day, I don't think any of us really know what the fuck he's going to do. Okay. All right, so about another one of his picks. Donald Trump wants Fox News Sheriff David Clark to lead the Department of Homeland Security. This is actually one of the things that Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio and the other goofballs went after Trump for. That's kind of true. Where they, because Trump had casually said one time, like, hey, somebody asked him, where do you get, like, your information from, and, like, how do you know about all this stuff? He's like, oh, I watch the shows. I watch the shows. Meaning, like, the Sunday talk shows, and he watches, like, Fox News all the time. So he watches it, he's like, okay, tremendous. Judge Napolitano would be a great Supreme Court judge. He said that at one point. Judge Napolitano, the judge on Fox News. He's like, yeah, I don't know, he's on Fox News, he's a judge. I'm going to need to pick judges if I become president. So I would pick Napolitano for the Supreme Court. Tremendous, believe me. So he did the same thing with Sheriff David Clark. Sheriff Clark is a fucking maniac. He's a strong character, very conservative. He's a black man, so I could pretend like I'm very diverse because he's black, and I could just put a black guy who agrees with me on everything in there. It would be tremendous. So now he wants him to lead the Department of Homeland Security. Now, honestly, this may be one of his craziest picks yet, because we spoke about Steve Mnuchin, Goldman Sachs, you know, he wanted the president of Goldman Sachs or something else now. Gary Cohn, that guy's name is. So Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, horrific, horrific, horrific pick, some of the worst picks I've ever seen. Your worst fears and nightmares about Trump are coming true, at least in that respect when it comes to his picks. Sheriff David Clark, listen to what he said in an interview with The Blaze. He said, I suggest that our commander-in-chief ought to utilize Article 1, Section 9, and take all of these individuals that are suspected, these ones on the internet spewing jihadi rhetoric, to scoop them up, charge them with treason, and under habeas corpus, detain them indefinitely at Gitmo. Now, later on, when he was asked to clarify that and say, well, what are you talking about? How many people are you talking about here? He said, I'd put up to 1 million people at Guantanamo Bay and take away their rights. And the key word in what I just read you, quote, suspected. Let me ask you a question. You trust Donald Trump's government to get the correct suspected terrorists? So in other words, you expect the ones that they suspect to, oh, they're all actually Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Even under Obama, who's much more reasonable, they don't always fucking get it right. We told you how George W. Bush and Dick Cheney got people into Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib and all the extrajudicial prisons. They've cut a deal with Pakistani warlords and Afghanistan warlords. And so they shipped those people. They weren't fucking terrorists. They just weren't. And we fucking indefinitely detained them, tortured them. At least 20% of them were innocent of any crime at all. Some of them died after we tortured them. We did hypothermia torture, anal rape, anal feeding, mock burials, sleep deprivation. I mean, the list goes on and on. We used a fucking communist Chinese manual on how to torture. And then we say, well, it was enhanced interrogation. But this guy, Sheriff David Clark, says, yeah, up to 1 million people who I suspect are terrorists, we're just going to ship them to Gitmo and take away their rights. That is the single most un-American thing I've ever heard anybody say, ever. Man, look, there's a reason why we have habeas corpus and due process, because the government doesn't always get it right. So you need a way to adjudicate it. You need a way to figure out if the government got the right person or got the wrong person and what the punishment should be for that person. But they don't care, man. And isn't it funny? The people who claim to distrust government the most on the most important issues, your rights and life and death, they're like, just trust them. Just trust them. If they're suspected terrorists, ship them to Gitmo, take away all their rights. But you're the guys who say you don't trust government. You don't trust the fucking DMV to work right. You suspect the government will get 1 million people who they suspect are jihadis, and they're all going to be jihadis? That is fucking mental. That is just mental. That's mental. Okay, he wants this guy for the head of the Department of Homeland Security. You think he'd maybe have a little bit too much power there? By the way, four people have died in this guy's jail recently. He runs a jail in Milwaukee. Four people have died in his jail recently. One of them of severe dehydration. Do you understand that? We're in the United States of America. The year is 2016. A guy was locked up in a jail. They forgot to give him water. Head of the Department of Homeland Security. One of the people who died in his jail was a baby. I thought Jeff Sessions was as bad as it could get. I mean, Jeff Sessions for Attorney General. This is a guy who called a white civil rights attorney a traitor to his race. He said, I used to think the KKK were good people until I found out some of them smoke weed. He said, good people don't smoke marijuana. The guy is named after Jefferson Davis. He's the fucking president of the Confederacy. I thought it was as bad as you can get with Jeff Sessions. And this is the guy who's going to, you know, be in charge of prosecuting hate crimes. Please. Please. No. Turns out Sheriff David Clark may indeed be worse because he doesn't believe in rights. He doesn't believe in due process. He doesn't believe in habeas corpus. He doesn't believe in the Constitution. And it's not the same kind of thing as, like, the way the Cretans handle it now in government, which is also bad. Don't get me wrong, where they say, like, okay, every now and then we skirt that. No, no, he's like, that slippery slope we were talking about, let's go down it at about 1,000 miles an hour and just take away a million people's rights, lock them up, throw away the key, you're guilty enough because I said so. And hey, if some of you happen to die of dehydration in there, and if some of you were babies that I locked up, whatevs, dude. This is the guy who said, I believe in law and order, and then went on to say, it's time for torches and pitchforks. So do you understand how he thinks? This guy got pegged. I mean, it's easy. He's the kind of guy who's so tribalistic. It's anything we do is right, anything they do is wrong. That's it. That's as deep as his thinking goes. So we're the good guys. So if I lock up a million people with no due process, no habeas corpus, if I torture people, if I kill people, I did it for what I think are good reasons, so I'm totally absolved. The enemies do anything, forget it. They're the worst ever. You don't grant them nuance. You don't grant them, you know, humanity. Nope. So, and this is a guy who might lead the Department of Homeland Security. What the fuck have we gotten ourselves into? Okay. Let me do one more, then we'll take our final break. President Obama indicated that he'd like to go further on the issue of marijuana in an interview with Rolling Stone. He said, it is untenable over the long term for the Justice Department or the DEA to be enforcing a patchwork of laws where something that's legal in one state could get you a 20-year prison sentence in another. The point is that politics in a big, diverse country like this requires us to move the ball forward, not in one long Hail Mary to the end zone, but to, you know, systematically make progress. Okay, so he's right in where he wants to end up. He's wrong about the way to do it. You can tell by what he's saying here, he's sympathetic to the idea. At the very least, decriminalization of marijuana, but maybe even legalization of marijuana. At this point, 58% of the American people say, legalize it. What are we doing? And now we know there's so many states now that have legalized it. Colorado, Washington, California now, after the last election. So he's sympathetic. Okay, the goal, I kind of get the goal. But then he says, well, we got a big, diverse country like this. We need to move the ball, not in a Hail Mary to the end zone, but, you know, systematically make progress. No, yes, you should do the Hail Mary, point number one. Point number two is it's not even really a Hail Mary. Hail Mary would be 27% of the American people support legalizing marijuana, so I'm going to try to legalize it. Right now, I just told you, 58% of people want to legalize marijuana. You know what that is? It's not a Hail Mary. It's common sense. It's called democracy. People want it. You're the president. You should try to get it implemented. Now, furthermore, so he's talking about incremental change. He's doing the right thing with pardons and commutations. He broke the record now for pardons and commutations, and it's nonviolent drug offenders across the board. I couldn't tell you how much I agree with that. That's the perfect move. But you're missing one big piece of the pie here, Obama. You know, you're technically in control of the DEA. They're under your authority. They just decided we're going to keep marijuana a Schedule I drug. Do you have any idea how quickly I would crack skulls if that was the case? My administration was responsible for doing that. Because understand, the DEA, massive conflict of interest. Their jobs depend on marijuana being illegal and other substances being illegal. If you simply legalize marijuana or decriminalize marijuana, so many people in the DEA are going to lose their jobs. You know what I say? Good. Because you've set up a system where you're locking people up for no goddamn reason. You're ruining people's lives for nothing. So if your job is to ruin somebody's life, yeah, I want to get rid of that job. No, I'll find you a different job and we'll get you a better job maybe. But the idea that, you know, hey, it's just the momentum of the system and it is what it is, and the DEA is going to decide, no, marijuana is still a Schedule I drug, which means there's no medicinal benefits. Not only is there medicinal benefits, there's recreational benefits. This idea of it's like, oh, you gotta put it in the same category as like crystal meth, which, by the way, I don't even know if crystal meth is a Schedule I. It might be, but it might even be a Schedule II. So it's just, it's a fucking crazy idea, man. It's crazy to have it as Schedule I, and your DEA, Obama, chose to keep it there. No. I would call people into my office. I would throw a fucking tantrum. I would let them know, hey, I'm just going to fucking fire you. How about that? How about you're not doing your job? How about you're wrong about it being a Schedule I drug? We all know it's not a Schedule I drug. So get your shit together. How about that? So I would heads would roll if my DEA decided that. And you should be doing the same thing, Obama, but that's not his style. I mean, he just told you, well, we have a big diverse country like this, and it requires us to move the ball forward, not in one long Hail Mary to the end zone, but, you know, systematically make progress. Except you're missing another big piece of the puzzle. The way the system works, we have the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, which means federal law overrides state law, which means all you need is one asshole president to decide, hey, I don't like this, they could shut it all down. There's no legal recourse right now if the feds decided to move on California and shut down the legal marijuana dispensaries. There's no recourse if they decide to go to Colorado and shut down the legal marijuana dispensaries. There's no recourse if they go into any state that just has medicinal marijuana and they want to shut that down because that's illegal under federal law too. So if you don't fix it, your idea of incrementalism could leave us with nothing. Because now you might have Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who said good people don't smoke marijuana, and he could crack down on all of the legal weed and all the medicinal weed in the goddamn country. So it's times like this where your incrementalist ideology can fucking destroy us. Now, I don't doubt that you mean well on this front, and you really do want to progress to the right goal, but if you don't do this Hail Mary, which isn't even really a Hail Mary, well then, for fuck's sake, we're going to have more lives ruined. They're going to throw the drug war into overdrive. They're going to put it on steroids and human growth hormone. When you have people like Chris Christie and Jeff Sessions in control of stuff like this, what do you think is going to happen? When you have somebody like Sheriff David A. Clark in Trump's government, what do you think? Who are the voices in the room talking about these issues? People who are incredibly against social freedoms, including marijuana and substance use. So you got to do it, man. You got to do it. And you say you care about your legacy. Do you care about your legacy? If you do, you'd want to leave something there that's lasting. So the pardons and commutations, that's lasting. You're going to get credit for that, and rightfully so. But if you change the schedule, I mean, think about how strong of a move it would be. Obama changes the scheduling of marijuana going out the door. And then you're putting Attorney General Jeff Sessions and President Donald Trump in a position where they would have to change it back. Do you have any idea the outcry in the country if they want to change it back? No, that would be huge. There would be a backlash to that. So make a strong move. Put them in a corner. And then let them fuck themselves up and tank in popularity if they decide to move it back. And I say the same thing with Guantanamo Bay. your legacy? Shut down Guantanamo Bay with an executive order. The Republicans will shriek and cry from the rooftops. It's unconstitutional. You know what your response is? No, bitch. You setting it up under Bush was unconstitutional. And guess what? That which can be set up extrajudicially and unconstitutionally can be shut down extrajudicially and unconstitutionally. You want to take me to court? Be my guest. I'll see you there tomorrow, bitch. Because then you have the court case and you have the Republicans on the side of we are against the Constitution, we are against due process, we are against habeas corpus, we are against freedom and liberty, we are un-American, and you're on the side of American values, the Constitution, freedom, liberty, the Magna fucking Carta, International Criminal Court, international law, the Geneva Convention, the Nuremberg Tribunal. Who do you think is going to win that in the history books? President Obama. Strength. I need strength. Even when you're right on where you want it to go, the way you want to get there is fucking everything up. I need you to wake up and do the right thing and be unapologetic about it. All right, let me take a quick break. When we come back, I got four more for ye. Story about ecstasy. What? Is it ecstasy? I think it's ecstasy. MDMA, yes. And Sarah Palin spoke to Breitbart News about what God wants, because obviously she knows. Stay right there, guys.
Thank you. up you with the left, the left. You won't fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me snap you with the left, the left. You won't fake,
son of a bitch.
Left.
All right, we're back, y'all.
I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Okay, here we go. Talk about more drugs. Yay! The kids love listening to Secular Talk. The New York Times has some good news for us about the drug war. They say, in a surprising turn, the FDA has approved continued trials of illegal substance ecstasy in the possible treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. Veteran C.J. Hardin said that after three tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, the only thing to break through his PTSD wall and relieve his symptoms was his participation in a small trial of MDMA in 2013. Quote, it changed my life. It allowed me to see my trauma without fear or hesitation and finally process things and move forward. Yeah. So basically what we're learning as time goes by is that the whole just say no mentality, all drugs are bad mentality, is horrendously stupid. And I mean that. So even the worst substances you could think of, so for example, heroin, you go, oh, come on, that's so bad and so wrong. Did you know that if you get in a car accident and snap your femur, when you go to the hospital, what do they put you on? They put you on morphine, which is what? It reacts in your body the exact same way heroin reacts in your body. It's basically heroin. So the idea of just say no, it's always bad, it's always terrible, it's always wrong. Really? Then why have people been doing substances since forever? Because they work. Now look, this isn't me trying to downplay problems of addiction. Addiction is a very real problem. It's a very serious problem. And some people struggle with it, and it could be the worst thing ever. So that's also a real part of it. But you have to keep everything in perspective and understand that those people need help, those people need rehab, those people need medicinal treatment. But just like Dr. Carl Hart said, who's an expert on addiction, he says 80% of all drug users are totally moderate, can live a normal life, can, you know, live just like you and me. How many people do you know who drink beer, drink, you know, whatever, hard alcohol, and they do it at the end of every day or every other day or on the weekend or whatever? A lot of people, right? How about marijuana? How many people do you know who wake and bake, who smoke, you know, pretty much every day? A lot. And aren't there people who can do that, who hold down a job and know what they're doing and take care of kids and all this? Yes, 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 yes. I mean, we don't even, some of the things, we're so jaded in the way we think, and so rigid, that some people don't even realize that, for example, like fucking Monster Energy and Red Bull, that's a drug. Caffeine is a drug. Again, people don't think of it like this because, I don't know, it's part of our culture, it's part of our society, we're used to doing it. Well, what do you think you're doing when you wake up in the morning and you're super tired and you go have a giant cup of coffee with a bunch of sugar in it? Your ass is getting high. That's what it is. But that's just a substance that we've come to socially accept. Some of them we haven't socially accepted. And some of them are good for recreational reasons. Some of them are good for medicinal reasons. Some of them it's both. When you talk about something like MDMA, yeah, if somebody was suffering from PTSD or extreme anxiety or severe depression and none of the traditional treatments are working, why the fuck not would you give them a substance that, you know, floods their brain with serotonin and dopamine and all the happiness chemicals and allows them to feel very open and secure and loving? That would be like number one on my list of possible things that might work to fucking help them. But we had this just say no mentality for so long that we don't even realize you could be the one doing the evil thing if you're on the just say no boat. Because, okay, another one. It's not just MDMA. We also learned with, I think it was shrooms, or maybe LSD for another one. They've been testing all these now, not just in the U.S., but the world over, because now the attitudes are becoming more reasonable on these substances. So now they're testing those. Virtually every time they test them, they come back with amazing results. So, for example, one of them, it was given to people in hospice, I think. So people who are about to die. And they know they're about to die. And guess what? They're fucking miserable because they're about to die. So how do you snap that? How do you make a person feel happy? How do you make a person maybe open up their mind to new possibilities or, you know, not be trapped in this fucking hellhole of doom and despair? You know what you do? You give them a psychedelic trip. Almost everybody came out the other end of it, went, whoa, that was a transformative experience, and now I'm not even scared to die. Now I'm just happy. Now I can live the last however long I have with my family, and, you know, we can really make it worth something and meaningful. How can anybody take that away from someone? You know? I mean, we live in a country, Xanax is legal by prescription. That's, you know, tranquilizer, sedative, it relaxes you and shit. If it's okay to relax you, you know, in a situation like that, if it's okay to kill your pain after a car accident, why is it not okay to, you know, cure your mental anguish in a situation like that? Why is it not okay to let people at least try MDMA or LSD or shrooms, whatever might be the thing that would help with whatever ailment they currently have? I think, of course, it should be. I think these things, I'd go further. I wouldn't only legalize these things for medicinal reasons. I'd legalize them for recreational reasons. And again, I get it. Well, actually, with like shrooms, with the hallucinogens and the psychedelic class, they're not even addictive. So they're not addictive. I mean, obviously, there may be other downsides. You wouldn't want somebody out in public who's tripping, who's fucking seeing stuff. I get it. But you can still have laws about that. You know, alcohol is legal. You're not allowed to drunk drive. I think that makes sense. It's called regulation. So you could have these things legal, but people can't do certain things when they're on them. That's totally fine, and I think drug users would be totally reasonable about that, and they'd understand that, and they'd think, oh, that's nothing. That's, you know, we can deal with that, we can handle that, and it's okay, because as long as the greater goal is met, the greater goal being more freedom, you know, so you have more freedom, more liberty, more choice for people, and also the upside of more medicine, I think people will be understanding and allow regulation, and I think there should be regulation of this stuff, but you should allow it. That's the most important point. So I'm happy that the FDA is now continuing to allow research on it. But again, I get anxious and antsy with this stuff, and I just want them to do the right thing already, which is at the very least decriminalize this stuff, and at the very least declare it has medicinal uses and it could be prescribed for such reasons. Again, my ideal is to legalize these things and then regulate it and tax it, but that would be step number one. At least decriminalize it and allow it for medicinal use, because now we have the evidence, now we have the data. It is perfectly clear that these things work. Okay, now I want to do these last three. Hopefully, I'm hoping I can get it done by like 1:20, but I doubt it. You know me. I'm just going to keep babbling until some hour and 30 minutes, of course, but I got three more to get to, and now we go to probably the goofiest story of the day. Sarah Palin spoke to Breitbart News, and she argued that God picked Donald Trump. How can anybody say that? So here's what she said. Quote, I saw more and more people's eyes open, and I think so much of that was based on the church in general, those people of faith who were praying to God that people would wake up. Remember, our founders dedicated this land, this new country that would be America, this idea of America, dedicated it to God. If I were president, I'd rededicate us to God. All right, let me pause there. That's not true. What are you saying? We are a secular country. It's in the fucking First Amendment. You don't even have to read through to like the Eighth, Sarah. It's in the First Amendment. They just fucking, whatever it is, they make it up. Whatever the reality is, you know, Stephen Colbert's line, reality has a well-known liberal bias. They're like, yeah, whatever, anyway. So the founding fathers all were fundamentalist Christians, and they dedicated this nation to God. Thank you very much. And I would rededicate us to God. Oh, that's great. So in other words, if you were president, you would make us a theocracy. You'd make us the Christian Saudi Arabia. Good to know that you're un-American. She continues, prayer warriors across the country, people who perhaps had never expressed their faith in a higher being before, knew that, geez, we got to be on our knees asking for a change here because we're going down the wrong road. I was so grateful to see so many people step up in that realm. No doubt, divine providence played a huge role in this election. I will boldly proclaim that. I saw it firsthand. What? You saw divine providence firsthand. So you saw God get involved and pick Donald Trump. How does that even unfold? What is it, like a face come out of the sky? Like, hello, Sarah. I'm here to pick Donald Trump for president. Divine providence. That's how God does divine providence.
Divine providence.
He says it like that, too.
Divine providence.
Sarah, you sound like a crazy person, because you are one. And you know what really frustrates me about her? Is that when you read through, like, her Twitter feed or some shit, it's just nonstop, like, snark and condescension. And, like, hey, liberals are so stupid, and they don't know anything about facts or the real world. And then she says stuff like this. God picked our candidate, and his hand was involved in this election. His hand was involved in this election. Really? God was involved? Really? That's what happened? God picked Donald Trump? So he went for the person who said, grab them by the pussy, I don't even wait. That was his move? That's what God? Where does that say that, by the way? You know, is that in the Gospel of Mark? Grab them by thine pussieth, I don't even waiteth. No, come on, man. He said, let's take out their families. Talking about the families of terrorists during the primary. Is that, who would Jesus slaughter? I mean, again, don't get me wrong, there's parts in the Old Testament where God just slaughters everything in sight, and there's parts where Jesus is more aggressive, but most of his message is fucking peace and love. Who would Jesus deny health care to? Trump says he wants to repeal Obamacare and basically kick 20 million people off the health insurance rolls. Whose wages would Jesus lower? Remember when Trump said, wages are too high. Wages are too high. Let me just tell you. I have to just tell you. Who would Jesus torture? Remember when Trump was going on the campaign trail? Yeah, we got to bring back waterboarding. I bring back worse than waterboarding. I torture even if it doesn't work because they deserve it. Now, to be fair to him, he flipped back on that one. But what issue has he not flipped on? But would God pick somebody like that? Well, maybe. You know, God, again, half the fucking Bible is just vicious, savage, brutal, genocidal, crazy shit. So maybe. But I always am amazed by the self-centeredness of these claims, too. Like, okay, God gets involved in the election, the U.S. election, to pick your favorite candidate. And nobody ever goes, God, man, he intervened and he picked the other candidate. God damn it. Nobody ever says that about my candidate, obviously. But then it's always so America-centric. Like, obviously, Sarah Palin would never, if somebody in Argentina was like, God got involved in our election, she'd be like, stupid moron. Somebody said this in Botswana or Madagascar or Trinidad and Tobago. They'd be like, what are you saying? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But when it's our country, well, what do you mean? Of course, God cares about us. We're the chosen people because we're superior. Such a godly thing, right? Jesus would be, those people are superior to those people. No, not equality, not, hey, you're all humans, all help each other out. I care about those people. I don't care about those people. They're such children, man. Snark and condescension to liberals. And then when it comes to the shit they say, no rules, no logic, no reason. God got involved in the election and picked Donald Trump. Obviously, God picked Donald Trump. You know, that sounds a lot like what they say in places like Saudi Arabia, what they say in theocracies. You know, God got involved and God picked the winner of this election and, you know, well, there aren't really elections for higher positions in many theocracies, but you get my point. You have, this is even what fucking terrorist groups say. The Taliban, God, it's all, we're doing God's will. That's what it is, and we're the chosen one, we're the chosen people from God. Donald Trump, God got involved. God got involved. And also, what does that tell you about how they're going to treat Trump? So even if Trump violates conservative principles that they say they agree in, they don't give a fuck. Worship at the altar of Daddy Trump. That's it. Just like with George W. Bush. We're conservatives. We care about the debt and the deficit. He exploded the debt and the deficit. Whatever. He's on my team, so I don't care. Now I'm for high debt and deficit. They don't care. So Donald Trump, whatever he does, whether it's fucking extreme and fascist and authoritarian, or if it's liberal or whatever, I don't care. God picked him. So I shut my brain off and I rent it out to my daddy. Sarah, that's how a stupid person thinks and how a stupid person acts. And we just happen to know that you're that. Okay. We have some terrible news here for privacy rights. Huffington Post reports, starting Thursday, a Department of Justice official will be able to go to a single judge, assert that a computer crime may involve millions of networked devices, and get a warrant that lets the FBI hack all of those devices. According to three senators who tried to put the brakes on that new authority Wednesday so Congress could at least discuss it, there are no concrete assurances from law enforcement officials that privacy won't be violated or that devices won't be damaged. Okay, so I need you to understand how bad this is. So we already have the situation with the NSA. They're collecting all of your goddamn metadata, and they have, what did Edward Snowden call it, turnkey fascism or something like that? Like, you can just access everything like that. You just have to have the will to do it because everything is stored. All of your metadata is in place. So Fourth Amendment, forget about it. That doesn't exist anymore. This idea of protection from unreasonable search and seizure and having a judge approve a warrant for a specific person and place or thing to be searched and the thing to be seized, they're like specific, fuck specific. NSA already violated that long ago, Patriot Act, and it was built on since then. We all know how terrible that's been. Under George W. Bush and under Obama, he didn't roll it back. He put it in overdrive. And then now, it ain't just the NSA now. Now, they always told us, no, it's cool, because if you have nothing to hide, you don't have to worry. Well, we know that's not true from all the leaks. So, for example, the people in the NSA were spying on their love interests. Shocker, when you give people the ability to do it, they're going to do it, regardless of what the rules say. They were leaking some of the information to the DEA and to local authorities. Hey, we're involved in a case here trying to nab a drug dealer. Help a brother out. Okay, here. Yeah, it's not supposed to be the case. It's supposed to only be for terrorism and, only go through the proper channels. Bullshit. Second, you give people the authority, they will abuse it. Now it's not just the NSA, now it's the FBI. Now they're saying, okay, all you have to do is go to one judge, get one warrant, and that one warrant can be used to look at basically countless devices. You can hack into countless devices, and it's totally legal. So instead of one warrant for one computer, one specific person or thing to be searched and seized, one warrant, and they could just claim, the FBI can claim, hey, I know that we got a warrant for this one person, but this investigation is connected to a million other devices that we're going to hack into, and that's legal, and it's totally cool. That's what it's like now. Our rights have slowly but surely been eroded over time, and I don't even know how many people noticed. I mean, there was a question. When the Patriot Act was passed, there was a question as to whether or not it allowed people, it allowed the government, to look at your library records. How far we've come since then. They decided, you could look at library records, but nothing further. Then it's slowly but surely, you could look at the phone records if they're talking to people who aren't in the United States, obviously. Well, you could look at the phone records for anybody, right? Oh, come on, you could just store all the metadata and look at everything that they're doing on their computer, right? And then now it's not just the NSA. It's not just the NSA and who they work with when they shuffled information to the DEA and local authorities. Now it's the NSA, and now it's the FBI. Hey, I got one warrant in a rubber stamp bullshit court for one device, and I can just claim, nope, this counts for a million devices. So you don't even need a warrant for anything anymore. Democratic Party, Republican Party, on issues like this, you think there's a difference? Doesn't look like it, man. Doesn't look like it. It looks like the establishment of both parties agrees. We would like to spy on anybody and everybody. All right, final story of the day. There's a guy in the Netherlands named Mark Langedijk. No, I'm fucking that one up. I apologize for not knowing how to pronounce it. And he decided that he was going to do physician-assisted suicide. Now, this is something in some places around the world is legal. I think in like 4 or 5 states in the United States it's legal. But he's going to do it not because he has a terminal illness, but because he has alcoholism. Interesting. So he struggled with it for 8 years. He went in and out of rehab 21 times. And the law in the Netherlands allows you to end your life if you have, quote, unbearable suffering. So he said, look, that's where I am. It's unbearable suffering. I want to end my life. So they go on and they explain how he had dinner with his parents and with his family, and they left, and they had a good time, and then the doctor came over, and they all got in the room, and they cried together, and they said their goodbyes, and then he was put out, basically. Now, it's painless, thankfully. They have ways that they can kill you where it's totally painless. But it was a really weird and bizarre story to read. So his brother weighed in here. So there's a politician, I think in the UK, who are using this story as an example of why they shouldn't allow physician-assisted suicide, I think at all, was his argument. But his brother, Marcel, weighed in, and he basically responded to this politician and said, you can close your eyes to it and keep telling yourself everyone is curable, but the fact remains not everyone is. My brother suffered from depression and anxiety and tried to cure it with alcohol. He's from a normal family. He did not want this to happen. He did not take an easy way out, just a humane one. That's troubling for people. That's a pity. I'm just glad my brother did not have to jump in front of a train or live a few more years in agony before dying of his abuse. Alcoholism and depression are illnesses, just like cancer. People who suffer from it need a humane way out. It's not like we go around killing people in Holland. It took my brother a year and a half and many struggles to get it done. Yeah. So anyway, this story here, it harkens back to the conversation I always have about the topic of physician-assisted suicide. And I expanded on this in the segment I did where I took the I Side With quiz. It was a long segment where I took the I Side With quiz for the 2016 election, and you go issue by issue. I spoke at length about this at one point. But the conundrum I always saw in this is, what do you do? Do I go full libertarian and say, hey, man, you can kill yourself for any reason at all or non-reason or whatever. It's your right. It's your life. It's your body. It's your decision. End of conversation. So that's the libertarian position. And part of me goes, well, yeah. But then the other part of me goes, well, hold on now. Why not allow it but have regulation? So, and then where do you draw the line? So if you have regulations, does the regulation say, well, you have to have a terminal illness before we legally let you, you know, kill yourself? Or do they say, well, terminal illness, or like the way they worded it here, I think was actually a pretty good one, unbearable suffering. So not necessarily terminal illness, but if you have unbearable suffering, then you do it. And then what are the requirements? Do we try to save you first? Like, do we try to make you want to live first? Do we have some sort of program set up where you go to therapy and you go through rigorous drug treatment, or you do all these different things where we make an effort to, by law, make it so that maybe you want to live? Like, are we required as a society to do that because we want to foster, you know, caring about our fellow people? So I've always been caught between those two things, either full libertarian, whatever, like have a fucking euthanasia store for all I give a shit, and you just walk in, let's kill myself. Or allow it but regulate it and draw a line somewhere. I permanently go back and forth. That's the ultimate 50-50 question to me. But here's what I know for sure. What I don't agree with is not having it at all. Now, in this guy's case, I have to say I'm more sympathetic to him doing it. And some people would argue, well, look, it's alcoholism. You know, there was a choice angle of it, and he could have stopped, and blah, 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 blah. I don't know that. I really don't know that. And I tend to think if you're making the decision to do this, you're not making it fucking lightly. So it feels weird for me as a third party who doesn't know what they're going through to step in and be like, no, I am shutting this down. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, really, if you're going to kill yourself for something like that, then is there a line anywhere ever for any reason? And if a fucking 6-year-old tells their mom, I don't know, I want to die and I'm fucking miserable and blah, 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 Is it incumbent upon us to try to help that person first, or just say, fuck it, you do what you want, and it's your right, and that's the end of the conversation? I don't know. These are very difficult questions to answer. But all I do know is, what I totally disagree with is the idea that you tell everybody no. The idea that, you know, hey, I have terminal illness and I want to kill myself. Well, that's illegal here and we're not going to let you. That is fucking callous. And that's an example of an instance where we almost literally treat our pets more humanely than we treat human beings. I mean, with pets, it's a little different because you never have the consent of them to say, yes, I would like to die now. But with humans, you can have that. You can have the, they can assure you, no, yes, I'm done. I'm done. I want to tap out. I'm in too much pain. I want to get out of here. And in that case, especially if somebody's terminally ill or something, I get it. I get it. So physician-assisted suicide is an interesting topic. I'm for it, but I don't know if I'm for it with regulations and reservations or if I'm for it no holds barred. But this is a fascinating story coming out of the Netherlands, which really highlights an issue that we've yet to cross this bridge, man. I mean, only, like I said, 4 states maybe have it legalized. That's nothing. 16 years ago, they passed this law in the Netherlands. Damn. So they're way ahead on this. You know, we got to get to the point where we start debating these things because it's an important debate and discussion to have about free will and freedom and liberty and what kind of a society you want to have, if you want to foster life and caring, or if you go more super libertarian. It's an interesting conversation to have, and we should start having it. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you, baby. I'll see everybody tomorrow. Mwah. Peace.